Well, today we're going to talk about hypocrisy, a subject none of us likes. I'm fairly certain that no one grew up saying they wanted to be a hypocrite. Nobody asked a 9-year-old, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And they said, "A hypocrite." It's one of those things that we don't want to be. And so I wanted to make sure we were talking about the same thing. So I actually went online to get a proper definition of what a hypocrite might be. And what I got was: the practice of professing beliefs, feelings, or virtues that one does not hold or possess, its falseness. Falseness. What we don't possess. There's another way to put this, one you may be more familiar with. You don't practice what you preach. And why do we not like this? Well, we don't like it for lots of reasons, but I think one of the most significant is the injustice of it all. When somebody asks you to do something that they're not willing to do themselves, it's just wrong. There's no fairness, there's no justice in there. Which, of course, is one of the reasons why we sometimes get this going a little sideways when children, and when it's time for bed, they'll say, "But you don't have to go to bed. That's not fair." So are we being hypocrites when we send our kids to bed before we go to bed? Well, the answer is no. And if we have the time and if the children are willing to listen to it, we say, the thing is, you are younger, your body isn't fully developed, there are reasons why you need more sleep than I do, and so that's why. We're not being hypocrites, we're just treating people as they need to be treated, which is what we kind of need to do. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about the ongoing charge against the church that it's filled with hypocrites, which anytime I hear it, if I have an opportunity to speak to the person, I say, "Really? I've been going to 2 churches on Sunday for the last 15 years or thereabouts, and I've been going to church more or less all my life. And I haven't met very many hypocrites." And what they usually respond with is some grand statement that a church, a denomination or something made that they didn't like, and then a particular person didn't follow it. And I say, well, okay, that's a little bit different than saying the church is filled with hypocrites. But the fact that the statement might just be a little flaky doesn't mean that we can't ignore it. And so we're looking at primarily the gospel passage today where Jesus healed a woman on the Sabbath. And we're not so much going to talk about Jesus and the healing. That stands for itself. I don't know what the right word would be, but I don't think we need to really go into that a ton. Instead, we're going to talk about the person. What is he called here? The synagogue ruler. So this is sort of the combination of the clerk of session and the moderator of session as well, in a Presbyterian sense. This is an important person, and we're going to talk about him. But first, I want to talk a little bit about something that has now become more and more prevalent in our culture. I'm sure you've run across it, and it's called cancel culture. Cancel culture is where, on the basis primarily of a single statement, someone is written off as being useless and needs to be canceled. It happens. It happens a lot, where someone says something, puts out an opinion or makes a statement that other people don't like, and it ends up with that person being, canceled. Sometimes they lose their jobs. All kinds of things happen. I don't go on Twitter very much. This is where this happens a lot, but in other such places, I go on Twitter. If somebody sends me a link, I follow the link, and if it takes me to Twitter, I see what's there, and then I leave. But sometimes I don't. Sometimes I get sucked into the vortex of Twitter, and I scroll a little bit and go from there. And within 5 minutes, I'm angry. Not surprised or anything else. I'm angry. I'm literally angry at what I'm reading. Okay, I shouldn't let anything have that much power over me, let alone something I can turn off with a touch of a thumb, so I try to avoid it. But what's happening there is our culture is moving us into this binary about everything. There are some things that are binaries, alive and dead. That's pretty clear, you're one or the other. There's a few others. But on the whole, a lot of the things that we have opinions about and that people speak about aren't binaries. But the idea seems to be that lets sum up everyone on the basis of a single statement. And because someone made that statement, then they should be canceled, they should be harassed, they should be whatever it is that happens to them at that particular time. And sometimes you have a bit of sympathy for this. Sometimes people say outrageous and evil things. But often it's not like that. So how do we resist that? Because we're part of our culture. I see it in myself. One of the reasons why I'm angry is because I realize I'm reacting against a statement that a person made, so therefore that person is wrong. And sometimes not even that. We tend to put people in two boxes. You're right because you're like me, and you're evil. You're even more than wrong. This is a terrible way to live our lives, but we still fall into it if we're not careful. So what's the antidote? There are probably more than one, but the one I want us to think about this morning is the antidote. Where did the synagogue ruler get this idea that he chastised Jesus about? Did he make it up? Did he become a synagogue ruler so he could tell people what to do and not to do on Sunday? On the Sabbath for them, Saturday? No. It was read for us earlier. In Isaiah, if you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, and it goes on and on. The Sabbath is referred to frequently in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and there are rules about it. The synagogue ruler wasn't making things up just to be irritating. He didn't wake up that morning and saying, no matter what, I will not let somebody who's been suffering from 18 years get any relief. No. He came at it from this particular perspective. Now, the perspective was wrong. But let's not equivocate here. I mean, what he was saying was wrong. It's wrong on the basis of the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, there are exceptions on the Sabbath. You are supposed to feed your animals. You're supposed to aid people in distress. Are you trying to tell me that on the Sabbath somebody falls, cuts themselves quite badly, you're supposed to wait till sundown to stop the bleeding? Of course not. But this person, this synagogue ruler, had so internalized these rules that they became a 100% application no matter what. The Old Testament reads like everything is 100%. But there are passages in the Old Testament that interpret other passages in the Old Testament that help you realize that not everything is always cut and dried. Because what does Isaiah say about the Sabbath? You honor it by not going your own way, not doing as you please, or speaking idle words. Is that the same as healing somebody? For that matter, is that the same as feeding your animals? If I decline to feed the dog until sundown on Saturday or Sunday, whatever day I choose as a Sabbath, because we have a bit more freedom than they did then, that doesn't make me a holy person. That makes me a bad pet owner. If we can somehow get past this desire to sum someone up on the basis of what they say, it doesn't mean that what they say suddenly becomes right. What it does is it keeps us from falling into the same trap of hypocrisy. Because what are we called to? How are Christian people identified? By where they spend an hour on Sundays? No, I'm talking about Scripture, not what other people might think. They will know we are Christians by how we love each other, by how we love. That's how. Is leaving somebody suffering another day when you could stop that suffering, is that loving them? I don't think so. And if we look at the synagogue ruler from the perspective not as a symbol of a terrible man or of a terrible way of thinking, if we look at the synagogue ruler as somebody who just didn't get it, can we possibly have a little compassion for him? It doesn't mean we don't correct this kind of behavior. It doesn't mean we say, wait a second, like Jesus said, you feed your ox. This 18 years like this, you think this should continue? Of course you don't. That's what we are called to do. This is one of the things that we are called to be, is the people we are created to be, which are people who bring peace and harmony without closing our eyes to evil and injustice. And one of the ways we do that is by refusing to put people in boxes that limit their humanity, because that's one of the things that's going on. As soon as I sum somebody up on the basis of a foolish statement they make, even if they believe it, I have reduced their humanity to a slogan. And that is a violation of the created order. We are all widely ranging people with all kinds of ideas, many of them good, maybe even most of them good. But I don't think anybody would say they've never had a bad idea. I don't think anybody is going to say that they've never said something foolish that they maybe even regretted later, because that's also part of being human. And if we want grace extended to us when we say stupid things, and I know I do, because I say stupid things, I offend people without intending to. Sometimes I offend people on purpose, but I still, at some point, and the duration between the offense and the feeling is getting shorter and shorter the older I get, I feel bad about that, and I want to do something about it. If we want people to give us grace or to extend forgiveness when we ask, then we need to be ready to do the same. It's tempting to step into the cancel culture that we're in. It's tempting to live in binaries because they're easier, and they are, they're easier. You're in this category, I don't have to think about you anymore. But it's not treating human beings like human beings. It's not treating people like we want to be treated. Because we want to be treated in our full range of humanity. One of the things you may have heard that's a useful thing to remember is that on the whole, we judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their actions. Yeah, I didn't mean to offend you, so therefore I didn't. Which is often, you know, when somebody says, I'm sorry you were offended, that's what they're thinking. This isn't my fault, this is your fault for being offended. Which is why that's not an apology, that's a passing on of guilt. Because we know what we want, what we intended to do, and it wasn't to cause offense or to cause damage. When somebody else does something, we can't know what they intend because we're not inside their heads. We don't always know what we intend, let's be honest. So what can we do? We can do our best to impute motives of goodness on people instead of motives of malice. This isn't easy. It's hard. Sometimes it's beyond me. But when I do that, when I take that slight step backward and say, that person who just said that stupid thing that really offended me, didn't mean to offend me. Often they don't even know I exist because they're from another country or they're another place, they're politicians, they're entertainers, whatever they might be. They weren't trying to offend me. There's a good chance they were doing their best to fulfill the law of the Sabbath, like the synagogue ruler was. I can't say I've reached the point yet where I like the synagogue ruler, but I understand it a little better, because I have some things I'm kind of dogmatic about, even though I know I shouldn't be. And if I can see that in myself when other people have helped me, maybe the synagogue ruler did. Maybe that was the turning point for the synagogue ruler. We don't know. But Jesus didn't just say, you're an idiot, go away. Jesus said, don't you feed your ox? Isn't this even more significant than the feeding of an ox? There's reaching out to the sense of humanity that this person might be able to understand. Not that they're useless or that they're lost forever. Jesus never called anybody hopeless. And we shouldn't either. It's tempting. I give into it often, I know. I won't speak for anybody else, but I know it's hard for me. But the thing is, when I look at people with hope, I become a better person, and I create the possibility of helping them become a better person. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't like it when my hypocrisy is pointed out to me. But when it is, I try to learn from it. And when I think of calling somebody else a hypocrite, I now more frequently than I did before think of myself and think, would I like a little compassion? Yeah, I would. Maybe, just maybe, I can give it to that person. Amen.